If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Welcome to a new episode of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your hosts, 49ers insider Matt Maiocco and 49ers host Laura Britt.
This is 49ers Talk, brought to you by Big O Tires. Laura, it's Seattle Seahawks week, and it doesn't get any better than that. And for the past, three Seattle Seahawks weeks, we've always talked about the 49ers, the Seahawks, Richard Sherman. Well, guess what? Richard Sherman is not a part of the Seahawks. He's not a part of the 49ers, but we can still talk about him.
Yeah, he made some news this week signing with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think if Tom Brady calls you up, and I think you go.
Yeah, and you're not mad, bro, when he calls you up. You just go. Maybe you sell some merchandise, kind of like what he did, Richard Sherman did several years ago when Seattle beat the New England Patriots, and Richard Sherman had those parting words for Tom Brady on the field after the game. But yeah, once enemies, now friends, kind of like how it was with the 49ers. Once bitter enemies, now friends, and people, 49ers, over the past several weeks, many 49er fans, are they going to re-sign Sherm? Are they going to re-sign him? The answer is no.
Yeah, the Bucs got to him. I don't know if it was first. He's been in communication with the 49ers, and from some of the reports I read, the 49ers, you know, made a big push to get him too, and he had a decision to make and ended up going with the Bucs. I do kind of feel like they might have missed out a little bit. The injuries obviously concern me with Richard Sherman, but with the situation that the 49ers are in right now, where they so desperately need somebody that already knows the system, is very familiar with the building, the structure of schedule, all of that stuff, that's one less thing that you have to do when you bring somebody new in that's not familiar with any of that stuff. So that's kind of disappointing, but you know, it is what it is. And Richard Sherman, I'm sure at this point in his career, wants to win another championship, and the Bucs did it last year. So why not give it a go with the Bucs? I get his decision. And again, if Tom Brady calls, you go. That's you can't hate him for that.
Yeah. And you know, this is something I asked Kyle Shanahan on several times on Wednesday. I asked him about him, some follow-up questions. And the fact of the matter is, you know, the 49ers have been in the market for a veteran cornerback. In fact, they've been in the market the past 3 weeks for veteran cornerbacks, and they've signed three veteran cornerbacks. They started off signing Josh Norman. Then the next week, it was Dre Kirkpatrick. And then this week, Buster Skrine. So, I mean, those are veteran cornerbacks who have a lot of experience in the NFL. Norman started 95 games in his career before coming to the 49ers. Kirkpatrick, 78 games. And then Buster Skrine, 92 games. And with Skrine, he was brought in because of the injury to Kaywan Williams. He's going to be out a few weeks. But Norman and Kirkpatrick are, by and large, cornerbacks on the outside. And, you know, why did they sign them over Sherman? I think some of it was finances. I don't think the 49ers were going to pay what Richard Sherman was expecting at this point in his career. But also, I think the 49ers have been kind of caught in this, not no man's land, but they just don't know, or they didn't know, whether they needed a starting cornerback or someone to be a backup, you know, a reliable backup. And when they signed Josh Norman, the starters were going to be Jason Verrett and Emmanuel Mosley. And then when they signed Kirkpatrick, Verrett was out of the lineup. And the first time that Mosley was healthy was Sunday night against the Packers, and the starters were Josh Norman and Emmanuel Mosley. So, you know, I asked Shanahan on Wednesday, did you not see Richard Sherman as a starter? You know, right now the starters are Norman, as long as he's healthy, and he missed he'll miss some practice time early in the week with that bruised lung, and he was spitting up blood, and it sounds
horrible. Is he going to be able to play on Sunday?
I don't know. We'll have to see how that goes, how the week
goes. Because I would be shocked if he would be, if he could play on Sunday with a bruised lung. I don't know. Yeah. That seems a little aggressive.
It does seem aggressive. And so if they were to bring in Sherman, you know, you're not bringing him in unless he's a starter.
Yeah.
And so the question then is, okay, if Norman's healthy and if Mosley's healthy, are those your starters? Or would Richard Sherman have come in and been an upgrade over one of those two and been a starter? I would think that he'd have to be a starter, but has the team evaluated this? And obviously they're not going to say, well, we just think Norman's a better football player. We had no use for Richard Sherman. I don't think they certainly wouldn't say that publicly, and I don't know that they believe that, but now it's kind of defined. Whereas, you know, before the season started, you can see why they didn't really want to bring in Sherman, because they didn't envision him as a starter. And the Tampa Bay Buccaneers certainly do, because they're down a couple of cornerbacks. And just like the 49ers, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers have Super Bowl aspirations. Heck, they won it last year. They think they can repeat. And so Sherman ends up signing with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, a one-year contract. So we'll see how that turns out. But certainly the play of the cornerbacks is something that you know, everybody's taken notice of. So obviously a lot of questions with the 49ers coming off the loss of the Packers. I got questions at quarterback. I got offensive line questions. I got running back questions. I got defensive line questions. I got cornerback questions.
How much time do we have?
Yeah.
How much time do we have?
Well, is there anybody we can bring in to help us?
I phoned a friend.
I phoned a friend.
Joe Staley is going to join us. So I think we can ask all of these questions to Joe Staley. He'll have a lot more insight into some of this, just especially, you know, as recently as he played with the team. That's one of the great things about Joe, is he understands all the behind the scenes with Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch specifically, and many of these players too. So we're going to ask him all of those questions. And I think hindsight's always 20/20. If you go back before all these injuries, the 49ers didn't need to sign Richard Sherman. Now that they have all these injuries, yeah, you start to wonder. But you know, these injuries just happened over the first 3 weeks of the season.
Yeah, and it, as always, one of the main topics is going to be the quarterback position. And, you know, I wrote
this column. Can I tell you something real quick?
Yes, please do.
I feel seen, because I read your article about the perception of Jimmy Garoppolo, and I was two sentences in, and I was like, wait a second, I feel seen. This is exactly how I feel.
You feel so, what?
Seen. Like seen. I feel seen.
Like what seen, as saying, in people are watching you.
No. Oh, people, help me with Matt with this. This is something the young kids say.
Okay. I feel seen.
I feel seen, like you were in my head. I was reading the article about Jimmy Garoppolo and your perception. Let me see what it's titled. It's called Lost Changed Perception of Jimmy G's Performance Against the Packers. Mm-hmm. So you have a lot of great information in here, but one of your lines is he started 36 games for the 49ers. Why, after all this time, is he still so difficult to figure out?
Yeah.
I ask myself that every week. I feel like I should feel a certain way about him, and I have trouble determining how I feel about Jimmy Garoppolo. There are many times where I want to stand up for him and say, look at the record. It speaks for itself. Wins and losses. You don't win in the NFL unless you're, decent to really good. Mm-hmm. And I don't care who's around you. And then there are times where you watch, like on Sunday, and you say, why did it take you until the final minutes of the game? I felt like the fire wasn't there until the final few minutes of the game. I feel seen.
Yes. Yeah, my thought exactly was I just don't know what I'm seeing with Jimmy Garoppolo. And he's so difficult to evaluate for all the reasons you just stated. I don't know whether he's part of the problem or part of the solution. Sometimes in the same game, he can be both, as he was against the Packers. He was part of the reason the 49ers fell behind by 17 points. He was a big part of the reason why they came back and nearly won the game. And ultimately, the defense allowed the winning points. And Garoppolo wasn't on the field at that point, but yet you kind of hang him with the loss in the sense that, you know, he could have done better. It wasn't a perfect game. It rarely is, but it's also he's never, it seems like, the quarterback who is the reason you lose the game. And there have been just a few instances, I think, where he's been the reason they've won the game. But by and large, he does what he's asked to do. And Kyle Shanahan said on Wednesday, he thinks he's playing very well. And he says there's no quarterback battle. Jimmy Garoppolo is a starting quarterback. So we're going to talk a lot about this. And I see in our little Zoom room here that Mr. Staley has arrived. So we're going to take a break right now here from Big O Tires. And when we come back on the other side, we will be joined by our colleague at NBC Sports Bay Area, analyst. And I think he was a former player, too. I think he used to play football.
I think he did.
Yeah, his name's Joe Staley. He'll be right up after this break.
Now at Big O Tires. Through October 10th, save up to $100 instantly on select sets of four in-stock tires with installation purchase. Plus, save an additional $50 when using your Big O credit card. See your locally owned Big O Tire store for offer details.
As promised, our colleague at NBC Sports Bay Area. Does that get old, Joe? Staley?
No, it never gets old. I love being colleagues with everybody.
This is fun. Okay, I've got to ask you this because your first experience back at Levi Stadium with fans, the whole game, you know, situation since being retired, sitting in the press box, what was that like for you?
So silent. It was a football game like I've never experienced before. It was, I couldn't hear the crowd really. I wanted to cheer so many different times. I wanted to curse so many different times. And I just had to sit there and watch the game. Definitely a different perspective, too. I mean, you're used to, as a player, watching it from the field level, not really seeing everything develop. It's much more of a film, bird's-eye viewpoint of the whole entire game. So it was interesting. I have to get used to it. But I was also surprised how much of the stadium I actually saw. I didn't see much of the stadium as a player. But during that day on Sunday, I saw more of the stadium than I had ever before.
Yeah, you're probably just down on the bottom doing all the player stuff, and now you're up with the people.
Up with the people, and the snacks. The snacks.
So many snacks.
And you were also down with the people, because I popped over there to the set for the pre- and post-game show, and there were fans there. How was that craziness over there?
Yeah, it was a first time being, you know, on set at the stadium, obviously, and then doing a show live in front of fans. And, you know, it was my first time doing any of that stuff. And so hearing, you know, trying to hear and through the earpiece, you know, talk and make sure that I could keep my brain sorted of what I wanted to say while everybody's screaming behind you. Definitely a learning experience, but it was a lot of fun because it was really cool to kind of feed off that energy. It's kind of similar how it was as a player. You definitely feed off the energy of the crowd, and to have that there was a lot of fun.
One thing that Joe's not telling you guys is that the reason it was so, you know, he was probably feeling discombobulated is because they're screaming his name. They're like Joe chants going on throughout this whole hour of the pregame show and even the postgame show, I think. So that's, I mean, it was fun to see the fans have such an admiration for you. And I know how much you respect this organization and all that. It was just such a mutual great feeling. Obviously, the post-game show had some other feelings involved as well after the loss, but it was just really fun to be there. Okay, so Matt and I, before the break, were just talking about Jimmy Garoppolo, and Matt wrote this piece on NBCSportsBayArea.com and on the My Teams app that I was talking about.
I'm sure Joe read it because, you know, we are colleagues. I'm sure he devoured every word of it.
He's read all of your work.
I do.
So I just felt so seen with what Matt was writing about with the perception of Jimmy G, in the sense that I don't feel like I don't have a certain feeling about Jimmy Garoppolo. I feel like by now I should feel a certain way about him one way or the other. This guy is good or this guy is bad. And I'm just stuck in no man's land. And I feel like I think a lot of people feel that way with Jimmy G.
I think this situation is really unique because of the addition of Trey Lance to the equation. I think if you were to take this season and Jimmy's the only quarterback on this roster and you have a traditional number two, number three backup, if you look at his stats and the way he's playing, it's been consistent or even a little bit better this year than he has in the past. You know, he's not going downfield all the time, and he's, you know, but he is protecting the football. He's making key third downs late in the games. I think he's playing efficient football, but there's that unknown that Trey has right now that's causing a lot of fans and a lot of dialogue about what can be. You know, we see the limitations of Jimmy, and we all know where his ceiling is. Is Trey's ceiling going to be so much further? And there's a balancing act right now between playing Trey, is he the best person for this football team, and hindering his long-term development. Because I really do think the smart thing is for Jimmy to play, because he is not playing as poorly as everybody thinks. I think where a lot of that narrative comes for the last two games is the first two, or the slow starts in the last two games. You know, and I looked at that last game against the Packers, they were 1-4 on third down to start. It's team football. Two of those were the offensive line issues. You know, two of them were on 3rd-and-1. One of them, the center snapped early. Another one was pressure in Jimmy's face, causing the throw on the back foot. One was Jimmy's throw, was a poor throw. And then the other one, I forget what the other one was. It was a catch by Debo. I mean, it was a good, efficient one. But those slow starts, I think it's causing a lot of the narrative right now. And then also having Trey as the number two.
Yeah, I mean, there's this – and it's not just perception. I think it's reality that Jimmy's a dink and dunk kind of guy. And when you look at the average length per pass attempt, he's 31st in the league at just a little less than 6 yards per attempt down the field. And so that's only behind Matt Ryan and Andy Dalton. But then you look at the yards after the catch, and, you know, among quarterbacks, he's at near the top of the list, 4th in the league. So the one thing that I would kind of battle people with is, you know, it doesn't matter necessarily how far the ball is going down the field. It's how many yards are as a result of this, because you have to put the ball in the right spot in order for there to be yards after the catch. So I think that's part of it too, is that it's not a real pretty game that he plays. It's not like he's Aaron Rodgers and flicking the ball, you know, 25 yards down the field right on the spot. So you think Jimmy is still the guy. I agree with you. What do you think about just how Kyle is working in and giving the folks like us and fan base? He's given people little doses of Trey Lance and little morsels. And yeah, here's some. You can't have it all, but here's a bite here and there.
I personally would love to see more of him in between the red zones, like in actual game situations, to see, especially after last game, take some of that burden off of the running backs. I didn't think going into the game that it was going to be such a huge issue. And it goes into the whole entire team concept of everybody has a piece that plays their 111th, and I understand all that, but the run game was non-existent last game, and I think it really put them behind, especially early on until Kyle was able to kind of figure it out. But I think Trey can add pieces to this offense that defenses are going to have to account for, and I don't think we've even seen what that can be, because the plays you run at the goal line and inside the 5-yard line where you've seen him come in are different than what you're going to see in the open field. And I think you can do a lot of things, obviously, with his arm talent, but also the play actions and just a different look for the defense to prepare for. That being said, when you do use Trey in the middle of the field, it does create a different opportunity for the defense, and they have to do different matchups. But then when you put Jimmy back in, they go back to just playing that. It's like they have two different playbooks for these two different quarterbacks and schemes. And how is that all going to fit together and be pieced together? And when's the right time to utilize that? But there is an opportunity right now, because the running game has not worked. I mean, that's the bread and butter of Kyle Shanahan's offense. And I think they're averaging, 3.6 yards a carry right now. So it's nothing to write home with.
Oh, okay, so why hasn't it worked? Is it the running backs? Is it the offensive line? Well, why hasn't this running game been as good as we've come to know it through the years?
Yeah, watching the film back, you know, it's hard to see during the game, you know, why certain things aren't working. And that's where I think, you know, the coaching staff has a real expertise of making in-game adjustments. But, you know, watching back, I thought the inside three kind of struggled. And it wasn't a consistent thing throughout the game. It wasn't like I would go back and say, these three guys cost the running game the ability to move the ball down the field. But it was kind of one of those things where the offensive line, everybody just had one play where they were like taking their turn of like the center not IDing it right, possibly one time, or the backside guard not getting to the linebacker. And there's huge holes if you just make that one block. And that's football, though. And that's what they practiced when I was there, so much about the details and being on with the speed off the ball, creating those lanes, making sure everybody knew their responsibilities and adjustments. And when it's off, especially when you have a running back that can't just make you right by his ability and speed, and he's really depending on those lanes to be there, that's when you get behind, you start maybe getting out of it. And then also, I'm kind of rambling on here with this, but the more attempts you get, obviously, and this is an obvious statement, the more attempts you get and the more conversions you get early in the third down and staying plus on your schedule, more opportunities you have to set things up and to get different looks to the defense. But when you're behind all of a sudden 17-0, the run game's not going to work very well, you know, because you're going to have to throw the ball down the field to move it, and the defense is going to give you a different front, and you have to react differently. So there's a lot of different pieces that go in, but, you know, I would like to see the offensive line be a little bit crisper up front, and then I think, you know, the running back, Trey, just didn't look as confident running and stretching downhill.
That was one thing that I really took away from Sunday's game, was that I really did believe that you could plug almost any running back into Shanahan's system and it work. And I think week three taught me, no, you can't just plug anybody in. You've got to, you know, that speed from Raheem Mostert really does make a difference. He's able to, you know, get out of those situations a lot faster than anybody else. I do want to switch to the 49ers defensive side of things, because I was a little bit surprised to see the lack of pressure that Aaron Rodgers faced. He was under pressure on just 5 of his 34 dropbacks. That's according to Pro Football Focus. So here's my thing with that. So Nick Bosa's back. That's a huge difference maker for the 49ers. But now teams know Nick Bosa's game. They're going to try and rule him ineffective, which is what happened against the Packers. Mm-hmm. So if you're Kyle Shanahan, D'Amico Ryans, if you're the coaching staff, isn't that something that you're planning for now? Or is there just, like, who needs to be picking up the slack where, you know, Nick Bosa is getting double teamed? He can't do anything about that.
Yeah, you have to definitely win your one-on-one matchups, because going into the game, the offensive line is going to circle Nick Bosa as the guy that we're going to slide to, we're going to take our help to. They're going to give chips on the edge to kind of slow down his rush and create a group effort up front to kind of protect. And so you have – that leaves matchups one-on-one on the other side, interiorly, and then on the other side of the edge. But then also looking back at that game, I mean, I don't care how fast you win, and if you beat your guy immediately off the ball, if quarterback is consistently getting rid of the ball in 2 seconds, 1.8, you're not going to pressure the quarterback. You're not going to get there. Now, I do think that there's ways that you can combat chips and edge presence that defense have been doing for a long time, and that's running games and creating movement. So you're not just stagnant rushing the edge, you know, the tackles and rushing the guy that's head up on you, but you're creating movement and switches, and you can get offensive lineman to get edgy. But then for that to get home, you have to have a quarterback that's going to hang on to the ball a little bit longer than 2.0, 2.1 seconds. So they had that this week with Russell Wilson. You know, he's a guy that is going to sit back there and he's going to let plays develop and try to get downfield. So if they want to make an improvement, and if they're going to get chips on the edge like they did last week and a real game plan to kind of neutralize their rush, I think that's one of the ways to solve that, is to create different looks up front, make those offensive linemen have to communicate and switch off. And they have guys to do it. I mean, Eric Armstead, I went against him. He's one of the best to do that. And the little pick stunts inside and the strength that he has. So there's ways to get around it. I'm not too concerned, but it's, you know, definitely showed up in that game.
One of the kind of underrated parts, I think, of the 49ers the past couple seasons, even last year when with all the injuries, was that the coverage has always been pretty good, kind of underrated, but very good. In 2019 with Richard Sherman and Emmanuel Moseley, and last year Barrett had the very good season, and they kind of pieced together some other elements of the cornerback situation. You know, now they're in this position with Josh Norman as a starter. We'll see if he can play against Seattle. And then Moseley, if he's healthy, he's definitely a starter. You know, I know that, you know, we both saw Richard Sherman at John Lynch's Hall of Fame party. So we knew that there's good relations there, John Lynch and Richard Sherman. You know, could Richard Sherman have helped this team? I mean, should they have brought him in. Should he be a starter right now for the 49ers? Do you understand, you know, all the pieces that had to fit together, or why that just didn't come together to have Richard Sherman back with the 49ers?
I would have loved to see Richard back in the building just because of what he brought, not only on the field, but off the field. I think he's a real veteran, understands the game, especially with a new defensive coordinator and everybody kind of being a little bit patchwork back there in the corner in the DB room, guys coming in, only having 1 or 2 weeks in the system. Having a veteran like, you know, Richard would have been great. They added those pieces already, and I think Richard even spoke to that as being one of the reasons why, you know, he looked elsewhere, is because Drake Kirkpatrick and Josh Norman already being vet pieces in there to not, you know, choose this. It takes two to get in there, but I definitely think there's a place for Richard Sherman on the 49ers.
Yeah, and let me, I mean, not to cut you off, but, I mean, are Josh Norman and Dre Kirkpatrick, and then Buster Skrine, who's coming in too, he can play outside or inside. Are those three guys, you know, I guess my question would be, why'd they pick those three guys and not Sherman?
That's all. I mean, that's a question that I don't have the answer for, but there is a reason. I mean, John Lynch has done a good job of bringing in guys. There's a, you know, if you're going to speak honestly about it, I think there was an injury concern with Richard coming off the last two seasons, and then, you know, the off the field stuff, but he can 100% play, and he's a talented player, and you didn't know how that was going to be all handled, and you still don't know how that's going to be all handled for the NFL. So I think having a guy, especially with all the injuries and the need to come in and play right away, was maybe one of the deciding factors to bring in those two guys.
Yeah, and I think Richard Sherman also, we were talking about this before you hopped on, Tom Brady apparently called. I mean, if Tom Brady calls you, like, I think I'd go too. Like, you go where, and maybe he just wanted a change too. It's it, like you mentioned, it's a two-way
Laura, I don't think there's an NBC Sports Tampa Bay, so
I guess,
I'm not leaving.
Sorry, guys, but if Tom Brady calls, I'm going to the Bucks too. okay, so it is the Seahawks this week for the 49ers. They're 1-2 right now on the season, which is kind of crazy to think about. What do you think the biggest challenge this week for the 49ers is going up against the Seahawks? Is it Russell Wilson, which it typically is? Like, what's the biggest challenge that's going to hold the Niners back this week?
They've always been the same exact team. I mean, for the last – since I started playing, really. I mean, once Pete Carroll got there, obviously, it was a lot different. And but it starts and stops with Russell Wilson and containing him and trying to do your best to mitigate the big plays that he's going to have. And it always seems like no matter how well you play, he's going to figure out a way to have one or two huge plays that keep the game close. And I mean, in my situation throughout my career, you know, win the game. You know, I think it's easier said than done. I don't think it's a situation kind of like how Aaron Rodgers was last week, that you're not just going to shut him down. But there are ways to do that. You can get him to feel uncomfortable in the pocket. That's why I think the pass rush is going to have to show up more this week than it did last week. There's answers, like I talked about earlier, to, you know, to get that, maybe get creative with some blitzes, but create him so he's not able to just sit there and dissect the defense, especially with the weapons that he has outside in Lockett and DK Metcalf. And then defensively, it's been the same thing. Is where are those safeties at? I mean, from the beginning of time, it's the safeties for the Seattle Seahawks kind of drive that whole entire defense, and Jamal Adams and Diggs do the same thing for this defense. You know, when I was playing, it was Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor, but in that box, where are they going to line up Jamal Adams? You always have to know exactly where he is. If he's going to come off the edge, he's going to be inside. Sometimes they'll put him at linebacker and move another guy out to the slot. They get very creative with him. And so the communication up front for the 49ers O-line and the running game is going to have to be on point to get all their communication calls out, pick up the blitzes, and try to move the ball down the field.
And this is only 4 weeks into the season. You know, every team has played three games. You're going to have a 4-0 team in the division, you know, unless, of course, the Cardinals and the Rams tie. I mean, the Seattle Seahawks lose this game, they fall three games behind in the division race. And that's – I don't care how many games you're playing, 16 or 17 – I mean, that's quite a deficit to make up. So is there any difference? I know Pete Carroll always stresses this, every game is a championship game. But, I mean, I guess if they're playing as hard as they can every game, you can't necessarily play harder this week, but I mean, the 49ers are going to get Seattle's best shot, and the 49ers are kind of up against the wall too. So this is a huge game, isn't it?
It's a huge game, not only for the reasons that you stated, but also just because it's Seattle 49ers. And when I was playing, it always had a sense of like, regardless of what our records were, regardless if we were fighting for playoff position or if it was the beginning or the end of the season, it always had a feeling of playoff atmosphere, championship atmosphere. Is a very physical game, typically very low scoring, just a dogfight. And that's what I expect on Sunday. It's going to be no different. It's going to be, you know, guys feeling each other out. And it's been that way since I've been around, and I expect the same thing on Sunday.
Bang, bang, Niner gang. Bang, bang, Niner gang.
Faithful to the Bay. Be there as the 49ers continue to celebrate their 75th anniversary season with the full capacity of the faithful at Levi's Stadium. October 24th, it's Sunday Night Football against the Indianapolis Colts. Secure your seats today at 49ers.com/tickets.
Who are we? All right, there he is, our new colleague, Joe Staley.
So much good information.
A lot of good information. Very nice of him to join us on 49ers Talk for, what, the second time in about a month, I think?
Yeah, we pained him with that. He had to suffer through that twice now.
Yes, 49ers Talk is brought to you by FitAid. FitAid fuels your body with complete sports recovery using the power of targeted supplements and vitamins. Train hard, recover fast. FitAid. I think maybe the most interesting thing he said, and something that I hadn't thought about, was that Joe believes that because Trey Lance is the number two, and there's never been a quarterback situation where you could ever make a legitimate case for the number two guy starting ahead of Jimmy Garoppolo here with the 49ers, he thinks that that is also kind of fueling the voice of the fans kind of trying to push Trey Lance or criticize Jimmy Garoppolo. I thought that was a pretty interesting take.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe I'm out of touch. I don't feel like there's a super loud cry for Trey Lance right now. But I do believe that now that you have that option, the criticism of Jimmy G is going to increase. But really, the criticism of Jimmy G has been 2018 on. It's been kind of heavy.
Well, I would say the Super Bowl. You know, I'd say 2019.
After that, yeah, you're probably right. Really, after?
I'd say after the first Sunday of February 2020 is when it started to kind of pick up steam, just because the 49ers did not finish the deal there in Super Bowl LIV.
So I agree with that, because in 2018, he gets injured in week three.
And the season fell apart.
Season falls apart, but then you still don't know how you feel about him, because he had that great the great last five games when he comes in 2017. So you're like, okay, well, you know, maybe it was just I still don't know how I feel about him. Then the 2019 season happens, and it's like, okay, we'll take a trip to the Super Bowl, sure. But how the Super Bowl fleshed itself out didn't leave a good taste in people's mouths. And then you go to 2020, the injuries, and so then you start to get this body of work, but then it's still limited because he's been injured so much. All of that just goes into kind of this mystery about Jimmy Garoppolo. I don't know. Maybe I have a feeling at the end of this season, at the end of the 2021 season, I think I'll have a good handle on how I should feel about him.
But it'll be too late then. He'll be gone in 2022.
Well, I know, but I don't think that he's going to be hanging around in 2022, but I think I will at least have an understanding of what kind of quarterback he is.
That is such a cop-out, Laura.
It's not a cop-out.
You're saying you won't understand what kind of a player he was until he's gone? Oh, are you saying you...
No, I need more time.
You never know what you have until it's gone. That's what you're saying. Yeah.
Well, no, I just don't... I need more time, but I've been saying that for like 2 years.
Yeah, I've been saying it for four. Anyway, we got plenty more to talk about on 49ers Talk. We'll talk a little bit more about this upcoming game against the Seahawks after this break.
Get ready to hit the open road, kick up some leaves, and get a little dirty. With new Toyotas arriving daily, your next adventure is on the horizon.
Right now, get $500 cash back on 8 Toyotas, like 2021 RAV4, Highlander, Venza, or any 2022 Corolla. Toyota, let's go places. Grab the keys, come on, let's go. Cashback is available through TMNA and must be applied to transaction. Excludes RAV4 Hybrid. Take delivery by 10/4/21.
We're back on 49ers Talk. And as we mentioned with Joe, big game, 49ers and the Seattle Seahawks. And that kind of leads us to the Driving to the Red Zone Toyota fan poll. And
ooh, the what is it this week?
Is who is the biggest threat to the 49ers in the NFC West? And you can answer that at Twitter, at the Twitter page, NBCS49ers. I mean, I think I would just say all of the above.
Is that an option?
I don't think
click
so.
That one.
I don't think that's an option.
Didn't you love those multiple choice tests in school when it had that? Although sometimes it could confuse you because you're like, oh, it could be all of them. So that kind of throws me off.
Yes.
Multiple choice tests were always the best.
I always am way overdue on doing our employee training segments that are online.
Oh yeah. Haven't done those yet?
Well, I just did one the other day, yesterday, because it was like 300 days overdue. And it's basically these videos of like telling you how you shouldn't conduct yourself in a work environment, or just actually in public in general, or just in life. But I always look at like all of the above. Yep, I'm hitting all of the above. Every time I hit all of the above.
Hey, you know, yours truly, your next, one of your next trainings next year.
Really?
You get to mute me for an hour or however long it takes.
Can you send me the answers ahead of time so I can just click the right buttons?
I think that would not be allowed under NBC policy. So I will not agree to that. I think this Seahawks game, it's weird to say it because it's only week 4, but I think this game is going to be a defining game for the rest of the season for the Niners. Things could go off the rails really quickly. Not saying that the Seahawks are a bad team. I know they're 1-2, and I did have them at the bottom of the NFC West when we did our preseason ranking of the NFC West. But this is exactly what Joe Staley said. There are different feelings when it comes to a rivalry game. There are different feelings every single year when it comes to the 49ers and the Seahawks. And if the 49ers lose this game, then all of a sudden, I just think the morale is going to get, it's going to get a lot harder to build people up as you're dealing with injuries, as you're dealing with then at that point, if they lose this game, a 2-2 start to the season. It just gets a little bit dicey after that. And then for the Seahawks, like you talked with Joe about, you can't fall to 1-3 to start the season.
No.
Yeah, so I think it's going to be an all out battle.
I think it's a huge game for both teams. I really do. And I think it's, you know, you could make the case that, and I have, that I think it's a bigger game for the Seattle Seahawks, but it's equally big for the 49ers, because you don't want to lose at home to a division team. You certainly don't want to lose to the Seahawks. You have this opportunity to kind of put behind the loss to the Packers. And basically, if you go through a 2-game stretch where you go 1-1 against the Packers and the Seahawks in back-to-back games, that's not a big deal. You can overcome that. And I think, you know, seeing the questions about the secondary, this is a huge game for the 49ers defensive backfield, just to kind of see if they can keep it together. And I think I'm torn on the cornerback situation because of, you know, the players they have back there. Josh Norman has played pretty well when he's played here in the last 2 games. And I do like Emmanuel Mosley on that other side. So we'll see if the cornerback situation can hold up against Lockett, hold up against Metcalf, hold up against Russell Wilson. And if the 49ers put together a good defensive effort against this team, then that breeds confidence. And then you look at it and go, you know what? Maybe the 49ers do have the pieces to compete at the highest level against teams that will put a very good offense out there. So I think this game will be fascinating on so many different levels. And it's always the same, man. Whenever the Seahawks come to town whenever the 49ers go up there, it's a battle, and it's fun to watch. And I can't wait for it on Sunday.
I can't either. And I think also looking ahead to week five against the Cardinals, and then the 49ers have a bye week. So if they win on Sunday, then all of a sudden you're 3-1 heading into a game against the Cardinals. We'll have to see how, you know, that pans out with the Cardinals and the Rams. But
pump the brakes, Laura.
No, I'm looking
at one week at a time. Can't we just, I have enough going on in this mind of mine that I don't need to be looking weeks down the road. I just want to see what's in front of me and deal with that and then move on.
I'm a planner. I'm looking ahead. Looking to the bye week, wondering all the different scenarios. It's all brewing up here.
And so, Jimmy Garoppolo, what do you expect to see from him Sunday? I know that's kind of a loaded question because you've already said you have no idea what to make of him.
Expect him. Here's what I'd like. I'd like to for him to come out and the offense to get off to a quick start. We haven't really seen that in 2021 yet. And one of the first questions I asked or discussions I had with Joe on the postgame show immediately following the 49ers loss to the Packers was, it was just this overwhelming feeling that I had. And it was like, in the fourth quarter when it counts, why am I getting the best from Jimmy Garoppolo then, but I don't feel like I'm getting the best? I want that same passion in, like, when the clock starts. You know, first quarter, opening drive, I want the pressure of that moment to be on the offense at the beginning of the game. And that's self-inflicted. You have to do that to yourself. You have to get that up within you. And I think if Jimmy can kind of rally the troops, he's the quarterback, he's the leader of this team, he's a captain, he's all of those things. If he can rally that up within himself, And like light of like, hey guys, this is like the game winning drive right now. I want that at the beginning of the game. And I don't feel like I'm getting that.
No, you're not. I mean, think about the three games that they've played so far. They snapped fumble on the very first play of week one.
Yes.
All the three and outs week two. And then last week they're down 17-0. I think the key to this game will be whatever night that is, Friday night or Saturday night, when Kyle Shanahan puts together the openers. You know, here's going to be the first few plays of the game. They have to click with Garoppolo. It has to be the plays that they're running effectively during the week where Garoppolo feels good about them. And we'll see where it goes from there. But you know, early in the week, it starts off with George Kittle not seeing any practice time because of a calf injury. Yeah, I can't imagine George Kittle will miss a game. But you know, some of the guys that the 49ers are relying on aren't out there quite yet, or they're going to be building up as the week goes on. And I think Elijah Mitchell, he's a huge key. If he can be back on the field, and I think there's a pretty good chance that he will be back on the field for the 49ers, I think that kind of opens things up for the 49ers offense. And so it's running game, setting up the passing game, Garoppolo being on point, getting the ball in the hands of the playmakers, and the offensive line blocking it up, the defensive line putting pressure on Russell Wilson, and the defensive backs sticking to their assignments. There it is. There's the formula.
We've got the game plan.
There it is. Now let's see if they can execute it on Sunday at Levi's Stadium against the Seahawks.
Thanks for listening to 49ers Talk with Matt Maiocco and Laura Britt. Please rate, review, and subscribe for free on your podcast provider.
If you travel, you know how to pull off a perfect getaway. You know, after you enroll with your Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card, you get up to $10 back monthly on U.S. rideshare purchases with select providers, like a car to the airport. You know which remote retreats have the best herbal baths and where the Wi-Fi password is rarely used, because you're the escape artist. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Terms apply. Purchases must be on card. Visit go.amex/you know.